This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Robbie Stevens from LiveX. How are you, Robbie?
Excellent, thank you.
Excellent. You're the head of brokering here at LiveX. Yes. And last week we were talking about the Trump tariffs, but more about what happened the last time, setting the scene and what happened last time. And it sounds like last time they got on with it pretty quickly, but this time things seem to be, well, they might be getting on with it now, but we finished up last week saying that the tariffs are imposed. And what happened on LiveX the day the tariffs were imposed?
So yeah, so we saw on the 2nd of April about a 80% drop off in bids from US members, from US buyers.
The 20% who stayed bidding, was there any profile that they particularly had?
Not necessarily. I think there's obviously two parts to placing a bid. It's being active and saying that this is the wine that I want, but also the price I'm willing to pay. And so alongside that, people can come and be active and they can reduce their price down by 10% or they can reduce their price down by 20%. They can still remain active.
Yep.
As I said to you previously, the uncertainty of the whole situation is actually what causes that pullback.
Yep.
And what we've seen, we had that kind of week, 10 days of real uncertainty where it was the EU's been tariffed 20%, the UK has been tariffed 10%, there was China going up to 145%. And it seemed like decisions were happening and being made very, very quickly. So a lot of the time people just wanted to wait it out and just see what happened. They also needed to get, I guess, their ducks in a row in terms of how do we manage this situation ourselves? How do we communicate price rises with our customers? What if the tariff changes? A lot of wine is sold into the US on a pre-arrival basis. So the customer is buying today to receive in 6 months' time or 4 months' time or 3 months' time. What happens if they buy today and in 3 months' time the tariff has changed by 10%? Who takes that on? Is that the retailer that takes it on? Do you go back to the customer and ask for more money? It creates a really difficult situation to conduct business in. So we saw a period of probably 2 to 3 weeks where people were really just kind of trying to get their bearings about what this situation holds. And in that time, you also had the kind of unilateral suspension of the reciprocal tariff, I think it was dubbed, down to 10%. So that provided a bit more confidence back to the market as to, okay, we can return in and we can safely buy. Yes, we'll be paying 10% for the next 90 days until the 9th of July, but at least we've got some clarity on the situation.
Given you need 90 days, well, up to 90 days to ship wine in, did you see a sudden spike in the sales?
You could call it a spike versus the situation prior. There's still a lot of people out there that are in that kind of wait and see mindset. It slightly comes back to there's multiple different business models in the US. Some of them operate a very kind of low stock model and broker stock out of European sellers. Many operate high stock holding models and have some stock to tide them through and got everything in between. So I think what people have done is slightly take a view on how do I manage the next 90 days, and hopefully there's some news over that time that gives us more clarity on what the future holds. We have seen buyers return. We have seen bids return. We're not back to levels pre-tariff in terms of US buyers, but there definitely has been some return to the market. There's businesses that built on 75% of the wine they sell is European imported goods. So if they want to continue doing business, they've got to manage the cost of doing that business over time.
So one of the things Trump famously said was, don't worry, American consumers won't pay the tariff because the people selling the wine will absorb it. Are you seeing chateaus going, you're American, here, have 10% off, or here, have 25% off? Or are they paying the normal price and either the owner is wearing the cost or they're passing it on to the consumer?
I mean, I think there's a bit of everything here. There's at least four variables in this kind of algorithm of what does the price end up to for the American consumer. The first is, what's the value of the tariff? Mm-hmm. And at the moment it's 10%, but that might change.
Yeah.
The second is currency. the other big impact that we've seen from this is a severe weakening of the dollar,
yeah,
which may be for political means, you know, it may be kind of forced by political means,
yeah,
or slightly manufactured, you know, as much as you can manufacture these things, or yeah, it might be a crash of confidence that people have in the US dollar as a stable currency. But the dollar versus the pound and dollar versus the euro has moved something like 7 to 8% over this year.
Oh, it's making them more expensive. Yeah. US dollar's weaker, so it takes more dollars to buy.
Exactly. So a US buyer actually, since the start of the year, is feeling the pinch by about 17% versus in a world without tariffs and a world where the dollar was pounds 1.23, I think it was at the start of the year. It's now 1.33.
Yes.
So those are two variables. You've got the tariff, you've got currency, you've then got the American economy, and kind of how the American consumer, the willingness to pay, the disposable income for the American consumer.
Because Trump did inherit quite a booming economy. No matter what he said, all the numbers were very strong.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, the American consumer is not confident at the moment.
I mean, the numbers look strong. Again, you know, this becomes a political and economist matter, which I'm not necessarily qualified enough to speak about, but the numbers look strong. And I think, you know, in the first 3 months of this year, you've seen the economy drop by 0.3%. Mm. And you would expect that Trump doesn't want to be a president that presides over an economy that is massively falling. You would hope and expect that that's something he wants to turn around, and to the extent that he can. Caveat to that is he has also said that there's going to be some pain here before, you know, he wants to redesign the American economy, and there's going to be some pain before the glory. But there is a world, if he's right, that the US economy turns round and it starts growing, going great guns, and actually that might, disposable income, if you can go and reduce taxes for the American people, then you might see the impact of a 10% tariff become lighter. And then the final part, going back to your question on have we seen Chateau and domains in Europe reduce their pricing in order to pass that cost on. We're 31 months into a downward moving market at the moment. That's happening naturally in the value of the underlying wine, and the price of the underlying wine is becoming cheaper month on month. In April, we saw a 2% drop, the LiveX 100, which are kind of benchmark leading index. And that's double the monthly average we'd seen for the prior 12 months. So this did have an effect, and we'll find out in a couple of weeks' time. We run these indices on a monthly basis, the ongoing effect. But yes, there is an impact. You take away, as I said, 35% of demand out the market, and naturally there's going to be some price shifting.
And let's face it, the fine wine market is, the prices are a supply and demand. It's not a price quality, it's a supply and demand business.
Yes. I mean, there is, of course, a quality level that is required. But yeah, you can look at supply and demand as an easy metric for it. So those four things, tariff, currency, US economy, and actually underlying price of the product, they're a big soup.
Yeah.
And out of it is going to come price of a wine on US shores. And is the US consumer going to buy it? And if they are, then great. And that equilibrium might come at, okay, prices have increased 10%. If you get economy going, and actually if we see wine prices continue to go down by 2% a month for the next 5 months, you've wiped out a 10% tariff just there. Depending on what the currency does, which is a slightly more uncontrollable element, you know, that could continue to slide, or it could stabilize. The more, you know, we saw with the UK deal that was made and the China deal, we saw the greenback slightly strengthen. So it's anyone's guess, but that's it's multifaceted, this thing.
That's what we know's happened.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what might happen if we go back to after 90 days, we go back to a 30% tariff. And what? 20% tariff. 20% tariff at the moment.
Right.
We touched on the idea that maybe people could use bonded warehouses, perhaps. And you mentioned that last time during the last Trump administration, people left wines in Europe and the UK and waited for the tariffs to come down. What sort of strategies could a fine wine investor do in terms of managing some of the tariff risks?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely people looking at those options. As I said, bonded warehousing system in the US is nascent to non-existent at the moment. That's not to say that it couldn't be. And that would allow people to store with duties suspended.
And trade as well. That's the thing, isn't it?
And potentially trade, yeah, exactly.
So if you're an investor, and you're not really planning on taking physical delivery, you could sidestep the whole tariff debate.
Yeah, I mean, on US shores, the three-tier system would make that very difficult. Free flowing of alcohol in the US is non-existent in terms of trade.
It is quite a protected market, isn't it?
It's very protected. It's nothing like you would see in the UK or Europe in terms of who can do what. It's a very protected market, and the transaction of it is very protected. Buying stock and leaving it in Europe or in the UK is definitely an option for people. I think unlike last time where we were 3 years into a four-year administration and there was a kind of end, a potential end in sight. Of course, Trump could have gone and won a second term straight away.
Mm.
There was always going to be a potential cutoff point. People had a bit more faith in taking that view and I'm going to leave stock for the next 12 months in Europe, let's say. This time round, it's obviously far more of a political decision. It seems like it's a matter of policy. And so I think there's less appetite to do that because you might be waiting three or four years and still not have the clarity. And this is the thing with wine. You know, you've got people who are buying wine for consumption. You've got people who are buying wine as an investment, as a pure investment. You've got people who kind of straddle those two things. People want to buy wine at the best price that they can get it at and then store it themselves. They're technically investors because by definition, but they probably wouldn't class themselves as in investors. You've got collectors who want to own the wine and look at it and so on. And then you've probably got another sector which is kind of see wine as a luxury good, as a status piece. And so within all of that, you've got this slight contradiction as to what's the purpose of purchasing.
Yeah.
And therefore, what do you do with it once you've purchased it? So for certainly a group of people, storing it offshore in a bonded warehouse in the UK is a desirable thing.
Mm.
But for a large amount of the US trade and US wine economy, they need product there because it's being served to people, it's being consumed, etc.
Yeah.
So it's not a strategy that has across the trade.
And I suppose if we were in the old days where on premier, as Tom was describing earlier, was saying that, you know, on premier is about bought at the cheapest price you're ever going to see, and going forward the price was going to go up. And at the moment we're at you buy an on premier and then you watch the price drop. So as a buyer, if we were in the old market and prices were going up, you would definitely see people going, I'm going to buy this wine now and I'm going to hold on to it and then I'll drink it or sell it. Whereas now it's like, well, I'm going to wait 3 years. Hell, in 3 years' time, the price could be 30% cheaper.
Yeah. Going back to my kind of mini equation as to why, what decision am I going to make today about buying wine? One of the big things is people are going, well, the market doesn't look like it's got signs, you know, huge signs of recovery.
Mm.
If the market drops over the next 6 months and the tariff stays the same, if I need stock this year, I'm better off buying it in 6 months' time or 3 months' time when the price of the product has come down.
Yeah.
Even if, you know, the tariff is still in place and so on. So it's risk management.
What would happen in the situation, say, that the European tariffs went back to 20%, UK is now confirmed at 10%, and someone goes, okay, I want to buy a top-end champagne. They buy it from a UK merchant in bonds, so they don't pay UK taxes, and then they ship that wine to America. Will they pay the 10% tariff or the 20% tariff?
It would be the 20. So it's the origin of the product.
Not where you bought it from.
Not where it's been exported out of or where you've bought it from. It's the origin of the product.
Oh, okay.
Which with wine is really easy to tell.
Yes, I know. Because
there's lots of bureaucracy around it.
Yeah, iPhone, you wouldn't know where the parts come from necessarily. But whereas a bottle of wine, if it says it's Chablis, and the reason you're buying it is because it says Chablis, you know it's French.
Exactly. So
rerouting isn't really an option.
Not that I've heard, no.
Okay. Do you think we'll see if European wines now cost if, assuming the 20% tariff comes back in, if European wines cost 20% more, do you think you'll see a shift, or at least an opportunity for other fine wine countries? We were talking with Tom about seeing the Laplace has started to offer wines from all over the world through its system. And that gives the opportunity for wines like Penfolds Grange, for example. Australia is going to be a 10% tariff country by the looks of things.
Yeah.
Does that mean that those wines might have an opportunity to shine in the American market?
I mean, I think theoretically, yeah. Looking back to the previous round of tariffs in 1920, you did see...
1920?
2019 and 2020. You did see other regions increase their trade share with US, amongst US buyers. Mm-hmm. Australia was one of them, and Grange is the leading wine, fine wine over there. So yes, you might expect that if there's preferable rates for those countries. But I think at the moment, South Africa is 35%. I'm not sure what Argentina and Chile are, but I think at best they're going to be 10%, but they might be 20%. So it slightly depends. But I think that the challenge, and this is where, again, wine is maybe different to other goods that tariffs have been imposed upon. Trump's made a big deal about wanting to bring back industrialization to the US and stop cheap goods coming into the country. For example, steel, and he wants to, you know, American-made steel to come back. Now, I'm no steel expert, but as I understand it, there's a fungibility between US-made steel and UK-made steel and Chinese-made steel and so on and so forth. With wine, you don't necessarily have that fungibility. As great as US wine can be, and as entry-level and generic but easy drinking and whatever as US wine can be, there are US wine consumers who want to drink something that isn't US wine.
That's right.
There are stylistic differences that, again, people far more qualified than I am can go into. So there isn't that kind of general fungibility that you've got. And so they're actually alongside, and I mentioned with, for example, the US Wine Trade Association lobbying against these tariffs. Alongside that, you've actually got US producers lobbying against these tariffs.
Yes.
They're not for them because they note that they're all part of one big pie and you need to raise the profile of the pie rather than try and take share off anyone else. So I think that's an important part of it.
Do you think you'll see, I suppose we already see it, but a price separation between wines traded in Europe versus wines traded in the US, especially if there's a 20% tariff, which is a meaningful amount?
Yeah, you've already got price separation because of your kind of cost of shipping, your cost of doing business in different countries, etc., the desired margins that people want to make. There is already a separation which gives US wine businesses a huge amount of opportunity in coming and buying from places like Livex or from directly from European counterparties because there is that arbitrage opportunity. So in a world that the tariff continues to exist at whether it's 10 or 20%, ultimately we're looking at kind of a stock cycle here. There is a huge amount of wine on US shores. Some of it might be available for sale now, i.e. it's, you know, on retail shelves or in wholesalers' warehouses. Some of it may be in private client cellars that then if the price gets to the right amount, then it becomes too expensive for them to drink and they want to go and sell it. And so they go to auction or they sell it directly back to whom they might have bought it from or whatever it might be. So I was in the US a couple of weeks ago and speaking to some retailers out there. There is a slight hope that this could bring some price stability in a weird way, because we've been experiencing in Europe is prices have been dropping for the last 2.5 years. But actually, with this tariff and therefore the cost of replacement becomes that much higher, it might bring about some stability to the cost of goods that are already in the US itself. Again, that slightly remains to be seen. But in terms of kind of navigating what kind of future price points might look like, you've got to work through that stock that's there and sell it through, go through that stock cycle, which might be 3 months, might be 6 months, might be 9 months. It's slightly finger in the air maths there before people then come back and meaningfully come and buy from Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
unless the price from Europe is significantly lower, with that plus the tariff plus the currency, you know, they can import it and still put it on their shelf for less than the reseller is demanding on US shores.
If I'm a US buyer on LiveX and someone's selling wine, if it's a US-based wine, I presume the tax is paid. So will you see a stratification of US buyers wanting to purchase fine wines for investment or whatever reason from US sellers?
So again, it's one of the quirks of the system, I guess, with the US regulatory three-tier system is it's very difficult to operate in the same free trade manner that we do in Europe in the UK. So if we're transacting wine from a US seller, we actually have to move it back into Europe and then back into the US.
Oh, really?
So for that reason, we don't really see it happen apart from on US wines. So if it's a US origin wine, we have plenty of sellers in the US who are selling Opus One or Screaming Eagle or Harlan or Dominus out of the US into European markets.
Mm.
But as a kind of intra-US trade, the regulatory aspect of it makes it nigh on impossible to meaningfully do that.
Yeah, and LiveX wouldn't consider setting up an office in the US so that the wines could stay in the US. You go through your checks to make sure the wine's legitimate and all that type of thing, and then pass it on. You wouldn't ever consider that?
Everything's always on the table. It's just managing the
cost, I suppose.
Well, yeah. And as I said, it's a fantastically high regulatory environment. So just working out the means as well is as much as I said previously, I think the UK has long been the place to transact fine wine in the world. Part of that is a historic thing. Part of that is a current thing with things like the Inbond system.
Yeah.
And we don't have the three-tier system that exists in the US. As a wine merchant, I can buy and sell from whom and to whom, whoever I like.
Yeah.
You don't need multiple sets of licenses to operate.
And I suppose the final thing is, if the tariffs are at 20%, I imagine if you're just a pure investor, why would you want the wine to even go anywhere near America? You just trade and buy and sell, and then all the buying and investing goes on in Europe, and then the wines that make it to America are the ones for consumption or collectors.
And that, to be honest, that's exactly what happens.
Already? Oh, okay. Yeah.
For a pure investment, people won't move the wine out of a UK bonded warehouse or a European bonded or professional warehouse. Because if you're buying and selling for investment, you want to keep the maximum amount of markets open to you for buying and selling that wine.
Yeah.
And the minute that you move it offshore over the Atlantic or out to Asia, you're decreasing the amount of markets that you can sell back into. In the eyes of another investor or another consumer, the wine has become devalued.
Tom was saying earlier that America's worth, what, 20 to 35% of the sales in LiveX, but the UK market is still a very dominant market. So if you wanted to access the largest pool of purchasers or consumers or sellers, then the UK market is the place to be in anyway.
Yeah, I guess so. I think one of the strengths that the UK market has got is you can buy and sell to anyone, from anyone, and to anywhere as well. You can sell out to Asia reasonably easily. You can sell back into Europe reasonably easily. So as much as like the UK market itself on the ground has that history and market established, it's also the periphery that's important and being able to ship elsewhere.
All right, Robbie, thank you very much. It's been really interesting.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.